from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show.
This will be an everlasting love. This will be the one I've waited for. This will be the first time anyone has loved me.
And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Today, how whole grains can contribute to health by changing intestinal serotonin production. But we have been led to believe that serotonin is created in the brain. Yeah? You mean we have a second brain? Absolutely. This is from the University of Eastern Finland, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. That and about 13 other important original articles, all from peer-reviewed literature, showing how to live a longer and healthier life. Then yesterday, while boarding a plane after the retreat, which was extremely successful, not just for the people who were there, but also for WBAI, our sister station, where I've been for 43 years each day, we were able to earn enough for the station to pay for virtually all the premiums, 100% of all the premiums out of the last drive. That means you're all going to be getting your premiums very quickly. And we're happy to do that because you all talk about, hey, we supported the station, let us have our premium, and you're right. So this is one way we're able to open up that roadblock and make it happen. Also, while I was getting ready to leave, I got a call from a friend who says, Gary, did you read the New York Times? I says, no, I didn't read the National Enquirer either. And they're both about the same in as far as of objectivity and fairness. He said, read the front page, read the headlines. So I did, and it said something to the effect that 5G cell phones are not a problem. They're not unhealthy. It's all a Russian propaganda conspiracy. Okay. Having just written, along with our scholar in residence, Richard Gale, a very definitive article on 5G, many of you have read it. It's up on prn.fm. Just 2 weeks ago, and then broadcasting a program on it, I thought, that's strange. There are 10,000 articles, minimally, in the scientific literature on it. But then how many other articles are there on cell phone usage? So what we're doing today, we're going to offer a counterpoint to the New York Times, and then I'm going to play you five separate audio clips, not the whole clip, but from scientists in the field. Now, these are the experts. They're not affiliated with the industry. And you'll hear under oath a panel of five independent experts, one of the women saying that when a negative article about regular cell phone was coming out, the cell industry ganged up and tried to stop the funding at the National Institutes of Health, get a retraction of the article from a peer-reviewed journal, hired a group of scientists who would then astroturf, meaning they faked it. They were paid, just like tobacco scientists says, oh, there's nothing wrong with cigarettes or asbestos, or name the topic as poison, and you'll always be able to find some highly compromised individuals to tell the world whatever you want them to tell them. But she's saying this, not me. Interesting, because the legislators seem genuinely concerned. Then if you wonder why no one's that concerned about and why you're not going to see a real version of, let's say, universal health care, which we should have, or Medicaid for all, because we found another interesting clip today, and I'll just read it to you about how all these legislative aides, meaning the people who actually create the policies for the legislators, all attended an exclusive conference put on by health insurance industry people, pharmaceutical industry, to kill universal health care. So where you need it and should have it, and your legislator might be for it if his own legislative aides who do all the research said, yeah, we need it, we can afford it, we should have it. But then they're going to conferences because their future is not with that legislator. Their future is a revolving door going right into the industry that they're supporting. So we're going to show you how things really work in Washington, D.C. today. Of course, we begin with the latest on health and healing, and adults consuming whole grains, like whole grain rye or whole grain millet or quinoa, have lower plasma serotonin levels than people eating low-fiber wheat bread, according to this study. And it looked at the consumption of cereal fibers and what we're not getting and what we are getting. And they found reduced serotonin levels in the colon. And what's important is this. When you're eating a healthy whole grain cereal diet, meaning where it has the fiber, it has the outer nutrients like the B complex, you lower your risk of type 2 diabetes, you lower your risk of cardiovascular disease, you lower your risk of many cancers, including colorectal cancer and breast cancer and uterine cancer and prostate cancer. But also, because of the bioactive compounds in a whole grain, like whole grain brown rice versus white rice, those phytochemicals and fibers from which different metabolites are produced by your intestinal bacteria are extremely important. If you're eating white fiber, like white bread, white rice, white sugar, then you're not getting. You have a completely different composition of the bacteria in your gut, and it's a sick composition. So eat a wholesome whole grain diet and produce better serotonin, which impacts your brain. After all, serotonin is best known as a neurotransmitter in the brain. However, serotonin is also produced by the intestines and it remains separated from the brain. So, and it serves various peripheral functions, including modulation of your gut's motility, and increased blood serotonin also has been associated with a difference in your blood sugar. So a whole grain diet's the answer. From Oregon State University, adequate vitamin C levels can prevent inflammation in the development of metabolic disorders. This is important. This was published in the journal Redox Biology. We all know vitamin C, also known as ascorbic acid, is the single most important antioxidant. It's important for your growth, your development, the repair of your body tissues, and your immune system. It helps stimulate natural killer cell activity, and that protects you by having more of your body's natural immune system grab onto a cancer cell and destroy it. It also plays a role in many body functions, including how well your liver functions. So if your body lacks vitamin C, many processes will be affected, and that's not good. So vitamin C in more than adequate amounts is supporting your gut, your liver, your heart, and your brain, and protecting you against metabolic disorders like diabetes. That's what this article said. University of California at Riverside, good sleep quality and good mood lead to good working memory with age. A lot of people, starting younger people, and partly because they're using cell phones and laptops and flying back yesterday, there's two people right beside me who pulled out these very large tablets and were watching movies. And it was sitting right on this woman's lap. Little did she know that the only reason that has a signal is because the Wi-Fi in the plane, and that's shooting that electromagnetic pulse right into her reproductive organs. We're not told the truth, and we should. But think of all the kids that go to sleep with their cell phone on under their pillow, pulsing in their brain all night long, disrupting melatonin, and hence a good night's sleep. Think of the people that are stressed and go to bed with their worries. For all the different reasons, eating too late at night will raise our blood sugar and therefore cause challenges in getting to sleep. But any time you are sleep-deprived, that prematurely ages you. In fact, there's a statistic that is rather substantial of how many years of your life you lose if you don't have regular sleep from early on. And people in college frequently, not all, but many, will stay up late at night socializing or partying or just being on the internet. All that's pulsing. So a team of psychologists has found strong association between working memory, that's fundamental building block of a functioning mind, and three important health-related factors, sleep, age, and depressed mood. And the team also reports that each of these factors is associated with different aspects of working memory. So, for example, and you know, I filmed this on one of my lectures this week was how we can add 30 years onto our lifespan, even if we're 70 years old today and have not done a lot of good stuff. Now imagine how much you could add on if you start younger. There's no reason we couldn't be living to be 120 in ideal health. That's a reality. In fact, the oldest nun in the world just passed this week, and I believe she was 117. And a man in India, it is claimed, lived to be over 150. Is it possible? Yes. And I showed mathematically how it's possible. In fact, for the first time, I showed a chart of all the things it allows to die prematurely or an age prematurely or live longer. And one of them was sleep. And then the other was depression. And, oh my goodness, if you're chronically depressed or anxious, if you're angry, if you're judgmental, if you feel like a victim, wow, you could take 12 years off your lifespan, just that alone. So what this group of scientists are doing here, they're saying that your working memory, which is, by the way, part of your short-term memory that temporarily stores and manages information required for cognitive tasks like learning, reasoning, and comprehension. So working memory is critically involved in many of our higher cognitive functions, including intelligence, creative problem solving and language, and action planning. It plays a major role in how we process and use and remember information. So if you're not getting a good night's sleep, it's impacted. If you don't get a good night's sleep, you're more likely to be depressed. If you're depressed, you're more likely not to get a good night's sleep. It's a circular echo chamber of negativity. And so excessive stress, not getting sleep, all impact how quickly we age. So reverse that, and that's the good news. Get a good night's sleep, wake up in the morning with a list of things you would like to do that day, and then set your agenda for the day so you're more aware, you're more present, you're more disciplined, you're more balanced, so everything will fit in, at least as best you can. Next up, dietary fats entering the brain can explain the link between obesity and depression. This is University of Glasgow. So what does this mean? This was published in Translational Psychiatry. Obesity and depression have long been linked, with previous clinical studies finding an association between these two conditions. However, until now, the mechanisms of how obesity affects depression and vice versa have not been fully understood. Well, now in the new study, what they did is, and this was also University of Glasgow and Gladstone Institutes, scientists have been able to demonstrate the links between the consumption of dietary fats, like your average American diet, all the saturated fats and trans fats from French fries and steak, and that leads to obesity, and that leads to the development of depressive, what are called depression phenotypes, phenotypes. And they've also found that by decreasing the expression of a specific enzyme, and symptoms of obesity-linked depression can be reduced. So that's good. It's a little complicated for the average person because then you're getting into what type of fatty acids and what percentage of each. So let me just give you the best advice by understanding what they've done and how it can help you. It is not humanly possible to be overweight and healthy because of many factors you cannot feel, like increases in C-reactive protein, which can cause heart attacks, increases in fibrinogen, increases in homocysteine. You won't know that it's increased until you have a heart attack or stroke. You have an increased risk of depression, and many times you'll have an increased risk of depression because you're not happy with your body image. Now, nobody should be shaming themselves by how they look. That's counterproductive and counterintuitive, and it's just, quite frankly, it's inhumane. But we should also not hide from the fact that every time we lack discipline in some area of our life, it will manifest as an unintended consequence in another area of our life. What do I mean? let's say that that your social life is not what you would like at this moment. Maybe you don't have the right partner to share those special moments with. Maybe you one time did, and you don't have it now. And when you're with someone that you really care about, there's a natural increase of just bonding, like hugging and holding hands and cuddling, simple things that we should do in a quality relationship. That also increases a feel-good hormone, what's called the love hormone, oxytocin. By the way, that's not oxytocin. That's the opiate. That's different. Sometimes people might get them confused. When you pet your dog or cat for at least 5 minutes, you have this feeling of ease. You feel relaxed. That petting not only helps your pet, it helps you. And so it's just simple things like this. But when you're not having that, and you once did, then you begin to go through a withdrawal. And then you start feeling, you know, what's missing in my life? And for the things that are essential to your well-being missing in your life, then you have to ask, which tools must I master at this point so I don't feel unfulfilled, unrequited, I can feel good about myself? That's what's necessary at this moment. And when you don't have that, your brain chemistry starts to function differently. You begin to produce stress hormones. You won't feel it, but they're elevated, and they can stay elevated 24/7. That then can cause the fact that you're overweight. You end up with emotional fluctuations, anxiety, depression, anger, rage, helplessness, apathy, even suicide. So that's why it's so important to keep yourself healthy, because the healthier you are, the better your weight is to your actual normal needs, the less likely you are to fall into that trap. Now we know the mechanisms. Next up, a study reveals there's antiviral potential with pokeweed, P-O-K-E-W-E-E-D. This is from Indonesia International Institute for Life Sciences. Interesting, because Jakarta, which is the capital, if you've ever heard of Java, and as in coffee, comes from the island of Java, and then you have the larger capital, about 8 million people more or less. And I was just working late last night and into the morning on the new documentary. Today we're filming Chris Hedges. Later this week I have to go up to Canada. We're filming Professor Kruger, the world's greatest authority on trees. And we're going to film in one of the great forests there and talk about why we need to understand the health and vibrancy of trees in order to save the planet. And how many trees must we plant now? I mean right now, in order to stave off 2-degree increase Celsius in temperature? 1 trillion, that's with a T, trillion trees. Could we do it? You bet. Tiny little countries with no major resources have planted millions. And I think it's Pakistan and New Zealand have both pledged to plant almost 1 billion trees. Here in the United States, nothing. There's no program. Anyhow, I'm going to finish up. We'll be finished with the film. But while I was working on one segment, and wait till you see it. I mean, first you see all these wonderful cities around the world, beautiful architecture. What you don't see is what it's like for the poor people living in the same city, but instead of, let's say, 2,000 feet from the water where the skyscrapers start, which are sinking, by the way, you see people who have 5 feet of water in their houses every single day. And so we have all this filmed. We're not talking about a little ghetto. We're talking about the entire island of Indonesia. That was actually a series of islands. But the main one, like Java, you see about 45 million people just in Indonesia who are now, right now as we speak, not the future, they need to be transported to a higher elevation. And by the way, if you'd go just 45 minutes outside of Jakarta, you're in the mountains, and that's where the coffee is. And guess what? Coffee beans are hard to grow there now, if not impossible. All those thousands of small coffee farmers, and they're all small. maybe an acre, 2 acres, and they dot all around the volcanic ridges out there. And historically, they were lush, but because of degradation of the timber, those who were powerful and could afford it just ripped out all the trees to sell. Those trees acted as a watershed, meaning the water, when it would come down, the trees would absorb it. Trees can absorb thousands and thousands of gallons of water per tree, depending upon the size of the tree. And they're all being torn out. So now there's nothing to prevent it. And so we have film of just on a normal rain, not a storm, not a typhoon, not a hurricane, just a normal rain, a whole village being wiped out. Actually, you'll see it. You'll see the whole village. You'll see this gigantic mudslide. First comes the rain, and then there's nothing to hold the mud in place. The earth. So the earth starts to come, and when the earth comes, it's like taking off a sock that's up to your knees. As you start to push it down, it gets more and more dense and folds into the next layer below it. And then suddenly it's so mammoth. There's so many billions of pounds of mud that everything in its way just gets wiped out. And you see it, and you think, wow. Now, in the distance, you can see a major skyscraper. So here you have on the water, you see nothing but millions of peasants who, and no one's helping them. You actually see it's gotten so normal that people will go out and buy inner tubes, like we would float around in the summertime in a lake. And that's how they get their kids into their home. One of the parents goes out and gets the kid in an inner tube and then paddles with their own. And this is septic water. This is terrible. Also, we have film from India, from an area that's so bone dry that when the rains came, because they overdeveloped the land, now everything floods. And you see kids sitting in a schoolroom, probably about 100 kids, and their feet are up on the side of the desks as they're learning because this water's 2 feet up from a normal flood. And the teacher says, you know, we're going to be gone. And then you see it also in another place in Africa where all of history, there's never been a problem. Now every single village is floating away. Boy, do we not understand the consequences of the weather, nor care, unfortunately. And I just wanted to share that as an aside because I just was thinking about Indonesian International Institute, and that popped up into my mind. All this will be in this, the most definitive film ever done in history on the environment, the problems and the solutions. I intend to premiere it for our sister station this summer, probably in August. In any case, what we have found is that the pokeweed could either be a toxic plant or a dietary staple, depending upon where and who you ask. It's a brightly colored plant, and it's been dubbed as the vegetarian's pufferfish. Now, if you know what a pufferfish is, very toxic, owing to the wild edible's poisonous properties. And researchers have even found that pokeweed can be used together with an antivirals to treat severe infections, including Japanese encephalitis. And so we're not talking about you going to buy something and using it. We're not talking about you using a tincture of pokeweed against an infection. We're talking about how the Japanese and the Indonesians in this case are using this to potentize people who have encephalitis. And that's why the spread of through mosquito bites can lead to life-threatening swelling around the brain and into a coma. So we're just glad to show you that something in nature can be used in a constructive way based upon good science to help with problems. And finally, from Hubei University in China comes a study about the apigenin, which inhibits tumor genesis, meaning blood getting to a tumor, if it's used with cisteplatin resistant colon cancer cells. So it's a way of helping cancer colon people not to die. Again, I would never use cisteplatin. I would never use any chemotherapy on the intestine, colon rectal cancer, because I've studied the literature and I have not seen any evidence that convinces me it's going to help save lives. But this modified citrus pectin helps. And now we can add the plant apigenin, A-P-I-G-E-N-I-N, and that's important. So we're always going to share the latest with you, and that's important. We're going to come back from a little break here, and we're going to go in studio to Richard Gale, because we're going to offer a diplomatic response to what we consider wrong information in yesterday's New York Times headlines. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you if you've just joined us. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, Glenn Ocean, our chief engineer, and the Wonderkin who makes sure everything works right, we're building a new studio, state-of-the-art studio. It's a television and radio studio, about three times larger than what we have now. And we'll be broadcasting all over the world, starting in about a week. And he says, Gary, I could use some extra carpentry help, willing to pay a nice fee for anyone who can put in a week worth of work. So if you're a carpenter and would like to earn some nice money, just give Glenn a call. Help us finish off this studio. I'm not in New York City. I'm at my animal sanctuary. And Glenn's number, you can reach him at our main number, 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422, and just ask for Glenn. Let's say hello to Richard Gale. Hi, Richard.
Yes, good afternoon, Gary.
Richard, I've got a series of audio clips that I'm going to play, but first I'd like for you to address the arguments being made by this person, keeping in mind that the New York Times is still considered the paper of record, and therefore when something goes on its headlines on the front page, a lot of people are going to pay it a lot of attention, and it has power. Let's offer a challenge to it.
So this was an article, and I was a little shocked to notice that the author of it, the New York Times journalist in science, William Broad is his name, who actually, as I mentioned to you, he was a guest on our show at one time speaking about yoga. And he's otherwise a pretty good journalist. I mean, and so I was quite shocked that he would fall into the claptrap of a horrible kind of conspiracy theory is what he was kind of promoting, that the promotion of 5G EMF frequencies that are going to be part of the rollout, a global rollout of this new generation of technologies that, well, just simply all that it's really going to do, it's going to make our internet and our videos faster. It's not going to contribute anything else at a commercial level for the public. But he would kind of fall into this and then make claims that EMFs and 5G are completely safe, and that the claims that it's associated with Alzheimer's, cardiovascular diseases, brain tumors, even diabetes, low spermatozoa counts, infertility. And he's debunking all these. So we could take this in many different ways, because we've written on this before, we've discussed this before. What I found very interesting was that there is an effort being made right now to redefine, reclassify skin. Now, skin is our largest organ. It's in the body. There is approximately about 5 million sweat ducts in our skin. And scientists from the Department of Physics at Hebrew University noted that EMFs coming from 5G alter and damage the geometrical structure of our sweat ducts. And this is what is so. What this is doing is contributing to the melanomas, and then it carries all throughout the rest of the body through this electromagnetic frequency that is disturbing the cellular structure. And where would you like? Want me to provide some of the science, debunk some of the things that he was really saying? Okay.
Yes.
Well, another thing. Let me just say that. You know, the New York Times and the mainstream media are making us believe that that all the other nations are on board with this. France has banned cell phones from primary and secondary schools for a long time. It already, years ago, almost a decade ago, it banned laws for advertising cell phones to children. The Israeli health minister has called for the banning of all Wi-Fi installations in schools. The city of Haifa in Israel has already banned them. Russia has started removing Wi-Fi in schools back in 2012. The Council of Europe, which is one of the leading health groups for the EU, passed a resolution to remove all Wi-Fi from schools and rely only on cable internet connections. In India, there's a large effort being made to remove cell towers in Mumbai, India. Prohibit cell towers near schools, colleges, hospitals, orphanages, juvenile detention centers, and if there's going to be any kind right now we're at 4G, but if there's going to be 4G or 5G on any tower buildings in the metropolitan area, it requires 100% approval from all residents before any kind of installation. There's other states in India that have done the same. Ontario now labels all transmitters in schools as hazardous. And we also have, from the environmental factor, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has already associated EMFs with bee colony collapse. There's very little science being stated in William Broad's New York Times piece, but he does quote Martin Ziskin. He's a Temple University professor, but it turns out he's the co-chair for the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, the IEEE. And this is the group that works with Verizon and Sprint and the other telecom companies to offer the trainings of 5G. So this is a person who's completely compromised that New York Times is quoting as being their expert to state that the EMFs and 5G are completely safe. We reported in one of our articles back at how the Russian scientists had already published 878 studies on the effects of microwave effects on human and animal health, and plus the environment. And this was from the CIA report that we reported on. And so there was a large increase in autonomic nervous systems, cardiovascular disease, interruptions of our body's circadian rhythms, you know, and our body temperature for when we go to sleep. There's hypoglycemia, depression, resting tremors, hair loss, memory loss, chronic headaches, neurasthenia, and sensory somatic disorders. Deborah Davis, who's been a guest on our show, and is arguably one of the our better scientists in toxicological environmental medicine, who's at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. She's called 5G our next asbestos. And there's an oncology professor from the University Hospital Örebro in Sweden, who's Dr. Leonard Hardell, who's suggesting that the rollout, this global rollout of 5G could be in violation of the Nuremberg Code because of the complete lack of safety that's behind it.
Okay. How many studies are on PubMed? In peer-reviewed journals about cell phone and 5G health?
The number I'm getting, and what I'm going to state to you, is from a group of 26,000 scientists who have already petitioned their opposition for 5G rollout. This was a letter that was sent to the United Nations, to WHO, EU, Council of Europe, and governments of all nations. They're stating at least well over 10,000 peer-reviewed studies. I'd just like to quote from that letter because I think this is 26,000 scientists. Many of these are physicists, meaning they know the science from the physics point of view, as well as medical researchers. And they wrote that despite the widespread denial, the evidence that radio frequency, RF radiation, is harmful to life is already overwhelming. The accumulated clinical and evidence of sick and injured human beings, experimental evidence of damage to DNA, cells, and organ systems in a wide variety of plants and animals, and epidemiological evidence that the major diseases of modern civilization, cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, are in large part caused by electromagnetic pollution, forms a literature base of well over 10,000 peer-reviewed studies. If the telecommunications industry's plans for 5G come to fruition, no person, no animal, no bird, no insect, no plant on Earth will be able to avoid the exposure 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, to levels of RF radiation that are tens to hundreds of times greater than what exists today, without any possibility of escape anywhere on the planet. These 5G plans threaten to provoke serious irreversible effects on humans and permanent damage to all Earth's ecosystems. There was a similar kind of a letter. It was written by the EMF Safety Network, which is more medical doctors. We've already sent about 550 joint letters to the U.S. Congress already on this issue.
Okay, so Richard, let's do this. Would you update our article from 2 weeks ago to include this in a challenge to the editor to read what we've written, because he didn't mention any of this, as if it didn't exist, and the one person he did quote is highly compromised and biased and therefore not a reliable source. Okay?
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot. Now, what we're going to do now, we're going to play you some audio clips, not the whole clips. You can listen, download them on our program from our website so that you can hear for yourself. And we're just going to go through several minutes of each one so you get the idea. And these are all experts testifying under oath before different bodies of Congress and different legislatures about cell phones. Now, some of these are from 2010. Why? Because I'm going to show you that 19 years ago, we already knew how bad G1 would be, 1G or 2G, and that was back then. So I'm going to show you that it's nothing just about G5, and you're dealing with 1,000 times more deadly today. So we need this information to be shared. So download our article, read it, share it with everyone you want. And whenever we do an article, we've done over 800 articles, you have the information, footnotes, no blind sources, no anonymous sources, and you could present any of our articles in a court of law. That's the standard that we use. So download our challenge against 5G. Now let's go to the first of these clips.
270 million cell phone users in the United States, about 4 billion worldwide. I would venture to guess that almost everyone in this room uses a cell phone on a regular basis. And most of us don't give a second's thought that it could harm us in any way. However, a growing number of experts think there is cause for concern. Indeed, some international studies have suggested that people who use cell phones for more than 10 years are more likely to get tumors on the side of the head where they usually hold their phone. I hope today's hearing will begin to address that question. Our first witness is Dr. John Bucher, Associate Director of the National Toxicology Program, a cooperative effort between the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, the CDCP, and the FDA, to coordinate toxicological testing programs in the Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Bucher, welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you. As you mentioned in your opening remarks, there's only been 10 or 12 years of exposure to these agents, and it's increasing dramatically. And there have been some hints recently that there is an increase in brain cancers in people who have used these cellular communication devices for a number of years.
What are the considerations with respect to an additional potential risk for children using cell phones?
Children have a configuration of their skull that does allow penetration of cell phone radiation deeper.
Are you saying there's a potentially greater risk?
I'm saying there potentially is a greater risk.
And what limitations, if any, then, if any parents are watching this on C-SPAN, what should they do?
I wish I had a good answer to that. I think the...
Well, would there be a precautionary approach? How about the use of earphones to minimize risk?
I think that's a good idea.
If they can do this, they would be better to have some kind of device like this.
As I understand it, yes.
Why hasn't there been done here in the United States to look at the epidemiology of brain cancer among cell phone users? And why aren't we a part of the Interphone collaboration?
Well, Senator, my understanding is that we do. In fact, NCI does support part of the Interphone study. The Interphone study is a large study in 13 different countries that is supported by or is being coordinated by the World Health Organization.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Dr. Sadetsky.
I'm currently engaged in collaborative studies of brain cancer funded, among others, by the NIH and the European Community. For over 10 years, I have been participating in research on the risk of tumors associated with cell phones, initially as the principal investigator of the Israeli part of the Interphone study, the largest collaborative study conducted today on this issue. And currently, I lead the Israeli team of another study, also funded by the EU, on cell phones and children, called MobiKids. In 2008, we published findings from the Israeli finding of the Interphone study suggesting a risk of salivary gland, are located right here, salivary gland tumors among people who used cell phones for relatively long periods, when phone was usually held on the same side of the head where the tumor developed and when use was relatively heavy. It is my hope that the issue raised in this hearing will encourage you to promote research and take actions to ensure the safe and responsible use of cell phones. I would like to thank Dr. Deborah Davis, who invited me here, and I would like to thank you for your attention and for raising this issue.
Dr. Sadetsky, thank you very much for coming a great distance, and thank you for your testimony. Dr. Davis, you said in your testimony, again, following up on this, is that you said that Interphone has studied people who use phones heavily for a decade, has found that where persons have used phones heavily for a decade or longer, there is evidence of significantly increased risk, literally a doubled risk of malignant brain tumors. The one researcher to have studied young people who began using cell phones as teenagers, Professor Leonard Hardell of Sweden, has found that those who started to use cell phones heavily before age 20 have 4 to 6 times more brain tumors by the time they reach their 30s. Can we get some documentation on that study?
Absolutely. In fact, I want to also tell you, unfortunately, that there has been a history here that I think we need to recognize. When Professor Henry Lai and Singh developed the pioneering new technique for measuring DNA damage called the COMET assay that shows you a tail of DNA when it's damaged, when they developed that assay in 1994, they showed that radio frequency exposure to brain cells of the rat could be damaging in terms of the COMET assay. The industry response, which has been documented and is in my book as well as other places, was this. First, they went to NIH and tried to get their funding revoked. Then they went to the journal that had accepted the article for publication.
Who they?
The industry working against seeing this work published. Then the same lobbyists tried to get the article unaccepted in a journal where it had been accepted. And finally, they hired other scientists to do advocacy research to try to invalidate the science. And when those scientists actually confirmed the work, it was never published.
What is the strongest evidence you have that exposure to a cell phone causes cancer?
The work that's been done on the COMET assay that shows double-strand breaks in DNA after exposure to cell phone radiation is very strong evidence experimentally. If we tie that with the human studies of Dr. Sadetsky and others that have looked at people who have 10 years of exposure or more, we put that together and we have strong evidence.
Well, Dr. Sadetsky has testified that you see something after 10 years. Is that an accurate statement, Dr. Sinitsky?
Regarding the 10 years, yes. But what worried me was that in my study, I saw consistent positive results, and they always appeared where there is biological plausibility. They did not appear in this group or in that group. They appeared in the more than 10 years. They appeared on the same side where the phone was held. They appeared for the heavy users, and they appeared in rural areas compared to urban areas. And this also has biological plausibility because where antenna is more dense, then the exposure is lower. So the fact that all of these indications appeared where they should have appeared told me that it was a really red light.
Dr. Davis, you said that a cell phone should not be kept any closer than an inch to your body. Is that what you said? I don't know where does that come from?
That actually comes from the BlackBerry manual as well as from the iPhone manual. If you read the manuals, which almost none of us does, that is what they say. So while calling for warning labels, as I am simply calling to codify what the industry is currently telling us about cell phones.
Dr. Nadenko. And there are more scientists on that panel. Remember, that was 9 years ago. Now we have 5G and 4G. And what's happening is that as bad as it was then, you don't have to wait 10 years. As she said, every single risk group she found, and then you heard the other doctor say, in children, their skull is different. They'll absorb more radiation and with greater negative impact. What we have today is we have over 10,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on PubMed. We have a group of 26,000 scientists stating that it's dangerous, 5G. We have Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton working in collaboration with the telecommunications industry to allow them specific language in the law that was passed that you and I cannot say we do not want these towers near our homes or apartments. We have no right. That's going to be a major lawsuit that's going to have to happen on that. So everything I can look at as a scientist and as an advocate for health, I'm simply sharing with you that 5G is the next tobacco crisis because you're going to be doing so much damage to your body, and it's everywhere. And I've put pictures up even today. I picked pictures up on my Facebook of whole blocks of trees being cut down so that there's nothing interfering in the signal. And because the signal has only such a distance, they have to multiply how many of those are on buildings. And everywhere you look, they're going to be on buildings. And people will not know that they've got cell towers on their own buildings and wonder why they're getting migraine headaches and can't sleep or end up with an unusual disease. So if you took asbestos and cigarette smoking and you put that together with antipsychotic and depressive medications like those given to our vets, on a scale of 1 to 100, that's a 10 collectively against the 5G, which is at 100 plus. We have never done anything this irresponsible that I'm aware of in public health in our history. So I just want to let you know what's coming at you. And each day I'll play more of these tapes for you. Some other news now. The FDA just approved electroconvulsive therapy or electric shock devices for children 7 to 12 years of age. Now just imagine the physiological and neurological damage done by vaccines with xenobiotic, which means toxic vaccine excipients that can't be metabolized, meaning methylated out of the body through the kidneys, and which can lead to brain abnormalities like ADHD and virtually all other apparent mental illness diagnosis. Now imagine that you have a child that is considered depressed for whatever reason, and instead of looking for the real reason, which more often than not, it's just a lifestyle issue, you're saying it's a brain chemical issue, and to help the child, you're going to give the child a grand mal seizure by electrocuting the brain. This is as bad as science can get. This is horrendous. Electric shock does not help anybody, and I've written articles on it, I've studied it, I've spoken, I've counseled victims of it. It can permanently erase a child's memory or adult's memory. So the FDA, corrupt as ever, just allowed that to happen. So you should be concerned. Also, some other things that should concern you. According to an email from Les Jameson, he just sent it, says, "Dear Gary and Richard, isn't it interesting that West Palm Beach, which is a super wealthy area and where Trump has his Mar-a-Lago estate, is claiming exemption from the state law that would allow 5G equipment to be placed wherever the utility lies? As a reminder, this Wednesday is the National Day of Action to Halt 5G. It's at 4 p.m. at the Verizon store at 859 Broadway, that's at 17th Street near Union Square. It'd be great if you announced it on the air." Well, Les, I agree. I'm sorry I can't be there. I'll be filming in Canada on Wednesday. However, for all the people in this audience who have a deep concern about the health of 5G or a lack of health because of 5G and the public's not being aware of it, take the article. We'll rewrite our existing article to challenge the New York Times and hand it out to everyone you can. Send it to legislators and be down at this Wednesday, 4 p.m., at the Verizon store at 17th Street in Union Square. Also, this is from a new scientific journal just out today. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Science and Pollution Research International. And this is a group of scientists, and here's what they say. Quote, "Cell phone radiation affects the thyroid gland and may increase risk of preterm birth and thyroid cancer." Thought you should know. So for those people who don't seem to find any of the science except pro 5G science, pro-vaccine science, here's something also from Dr. Jack Wolfson and cardiologist, that's Wolfson, quote, "Measles and mumps infections could save millions of lives. How so?" And then it says a study from 2015 in the journal Atherosclerosis found that men had 29% fewer heart attacks and women 17% fewer strokes if they had had a history of childhood measles and mumps. Women suffered less events as well, and according to the CDC, an estimated 790,000 heart attacks occur in the United States every year. So according to data from the JACC study, there could be 229,000 less heart attacks per year if these people had the measles and mumps as children. So are people dying from measles and mumps? Quote, "The U.S. has not seen a child die from measles in decades. Most estimates of measles deaths go back to the 1980s and about 1 in 1,000. Some estimates it closer to 1 in 100,000. Check the history on the ones who died. Doubt that they've seen a holistic doctor." So what we're seeing is that if we have the natural infection as we're growing up, that it protects us. And that's important. Against this, and this is a board-certified person saying this. Also from Six-Minute Read from Liza Bertoline and Mike Ehrman, UPS eyes in-home health service with U.S. vaccine project. United Parcel Service wants to get beyond U.S. doorsteps with a new push into healthcare. The world's largest package delivery firm is preparing to test a U.S. service that dispatches nurses to vaccinate adults in their homes. Reuters has learned, as the company and its healthcare clients work to fend off cost pressures and competitive threats from Amazon. So to make more money, vaccinate. And by the way, if you think it's getting really bad out there when they're attacking people who don't vaccinate, interesting article in the Washington Post about what they feel about you if you don't vaccinate, even if you could have multiple injuries, if your kid could have died because of vaccines, and it been proven, they want to see that you're punished, fined, and arrested. That's correct. I don't have time today, but tomorrow I'll read you from the article so that you can see what they really feel about it. How about this? Quote, staffers for top Democrats reportedly attended a luxury retreat hosted by lobbyists fighting Medicare for All. Quote, this event wasn't about fixing the healthcare system. It was about protecting the healthcare industry, no matter the cost to patients, families, workers, and employees. As nurses, doctors, and ordinary Americans ramped up their nationwide effort to build support for Medicare for All at the grassroots level in Congress, staffers for some of America's top Democratic lawmakers reportedly attended a luxury retreat hosted by corporate lobbyists working to undermine the growing push for single payer. And this was according to The Intercept's Li Fang. So, they're working against you at every level. Read the article of how we can afford it and should have universal health care that I wrote. We would not only not pay extra money, we would save $1.7 trillion a year. We're out of time, everyone. I'm happy to be back and able to continue to challenge those who would abuse us just for profit in politics. Have a nice day, everyone.